statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. Sorry, guys, you are on your own.
This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
Alright, everybody, welcome to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings in studio, well, not in studio, on special assignment, which is keeping me out of studio. So I'm on a phone line, a very secure phone line, by the way, not tapped by any government agencies or anything like that. And Kevin Stanfield's in studio. Kevin, how are you, man?
Man, you sound like you're one of those phones like Jack Bauer used to use on 24, man, one of those secure CTU phones. That's right, one of those secure satellite phones. But that still enables you, even on assignment, to witness this strange, strange, strange football game where the Atlanta Falcons came from behind, went ahead, and allowed the Burgundy to go to tie the game up, and on a Kirk Cousins-esque type of play, picked off an interception and ran it back for a touchdown, enabling Atlanta to beat the Burgundy and Gold by the score of 25-19. And I was just saying, Claude, we were in communication during the game, and I tweeted you at one time. I called it a yawn fest, you know, because it was just so dull.
That's what was so interesting, because for most of the first half, that's exactly what it was. It was a yawn fest, and there was a point in the third quarter where both Kirk Cousins, I think he only had 105 yards passing, and Matt Ryan had a little more than that. Both of them had an interception, and neither team seemed like they wanted to score at all. And then right as we got towards the late part of the third quarter into the fourth quarter, that's when things started to get interesting. And it seems like they were in more of a competition, not necessarily who could score the most points, but who could miss the most field goals and squander the most opportunities to kind of take advantage of the game.
Yeah, the field goal kicker who was the best in the league, as a matter of fact, still has a streak going from consecutive games because he didn't make his first one, missed two relatively easy. He hit the left upright and then he hit the right upright. It was like,
yeah, why not hit both upright? Exactly.
It seems to me you should get extra points for hitting the upright. As skinny as those things are, they should give you like 4 points for hitting those.
Correct.
But like you're saying, Matt Ryan was ineffective. To be fair, he was hobbled with a injured Julio Jones that was playing with a strained hamstring. And early in the game, former Burgundy and Gold, wide receiver whose name escapes me.
Leonard Hankerson.
Yeah, Hankerson. He was injured his ribs, and I think that was kind of due to Matt Ryan laying him out at one point. I mean, stretching him out and allowing him to get injured. But still, I mean, these are pro football players. It should be next man up. But Ryan had a dazed look in his eyes the whole game. It's like Matt Ryan usually is the cool, calm, and collected guy.
Matty Ice is what he's called, right?
Right. But he was just like confused by two second string defensive backs. Well, Breland and Blackman played really above and beyond what you expected them to do. I mean, they shut out Julio Jones. I mean, the only touchdown he scored was on a fumble recovery, and they played as well as you could expect two young defensive backs to play.
Well, that was what was very interesting to me, because before the game, when I looked at the inactive list, and we'll talk more about that later on in the program. By the way, you're listening to the Federal Football Report on federalnewsradio.com, also 1500 AM and 820 AM. I'm Claude Jennings on assignment in a special line for the show. I looked at the inactive list, and when you see D'Angelo Hall and you see Culliver on that list, you're thinking it's going to be a long, long afternoon for the Burgundy and Gold. But those young boys, I don't care whether it's Julio Jones with a strained hamstring or Hankerson, bothered with a rib injury. These guys still have really good professional football players on that offensive side of the ball with a great quarterback, and they were able to hold their own.
Yeah, you And I think it was due to their willingness to play and let it all hang out. And it was on the ineffectiveness of Matt Ryan, who overthrew wide open receivers. He had Hankerson clearly open for a touchdown at one point and overthrew him. And but still, I mean, it doesn't matter. They don't ask how, they ask how many, right? You know, and Brittany and Gold were given every opportunity to win this game, every opportunity. And when it came down to it, even Captain Kirk surprised me. Because he drove them down in three plays in the field goal range. And, and so I had to be impressed, because every time Captain Kirk draws back the throw, I'm starting to hold my breath now. It's like I can be an expert underwater diver for as many times as Captain Kirk expects me to hold my breath. Because Vince Lombardi said one time, when you throw a football in a football game, only three things can happen. And two of them are bad. If you think about it, and that's why and it's unfair to Kirk. It's unfair to him, but I mean, he is who he is. And I mean, he had a great comeback victory against Philadelphia. And in fairness to him, he was hit in the chest when he released that last pass to Grant on the sideline. Grant slipped, but the defensive player was right there. He knew where the ball was going. The ball hit him right between, you know, right in the numbers. So I don't know if Kirk was just throwing to the spot, but this isn't the time that you just let it go and hope for the best. You gotta be precise. Where Kirk failed, even having a decent game, is where having a bad game, the other quarterback succeeded. Because when it came down to crunch time, Ryan did what he had to do for his team to win the game.
Well, that's the thing. And I mean, last show we started off talking about, was the legend of Kirk Cousins established. And it seemed like he had a second chance with the game against the Falcons to kind of, you know, establish that. Like we said last week with the win against the Eagles, you get those moments that can define a career that, you're down by 4 points. It's less than 2 minutes left. What are you going to do? You got to score. He came against the Eagles and he scored. He came back against that to win the game. And then you're faced with a situation where, you know, let's not even get to the point. Because I don't even want to talk about the last, the last drive to come back to get to overtime and then the interception. Okay, that's one thing. But what about those moments where you had the lead 16-12 and needed those first downs and needed another score to get into the end zone to win the game? You know, those are the things that I think aren't seen. It's easy to look at that last drive with less than a minute or the overtime win or loss at the hands of the quarterback. But a lot of times it's those what seems to be mundane, but you know it's an important third down, or you know it's an important drive, and you know you need more than just a field goal here in order to put the team up by more. And those are the things that he has to start making if he's going to be one of the better quarterbacks in the league. Not necessarily that last minute, because that last minute, anything can happen. You can win it, you can lose it. But it's that it's in the fourth quarter. It's when you're already up by 3 points or you're already up by 5 points. At one time they were up 16-12. It's when you're up 16-12 and the game's not necessarily on the line right here with this third down or this second down, is can you make this play to extend the drive, or instead of scoring a field goal, can you score in the red zone to put your team up by four as opposed to that, I guess it would be seven as opposed to that three, or six as opposed to the four.
Well, what I found interesting, if you just take a comparison of the two teams and what it was they were trying to accomplish, we said last week that a good running back, it takes them 20 carries to really get into the feel of the game where you can tell whether he has it or not. And I'm a little confused as to what the thought process here is. What's the philosophy? How do you tell who is supposed to be in the game when? I mean, Matt Jones had 11 attempts for 20 yards. He did score a touchdown, but that was, you know, it was just, I think it was like first and goal. He came in the game, but was scored a touchdown. It seems kind of.
Yeah.
Right. Alfred Morris had 8 carries for 15 yards, right? Chris Thompson had 3 carries for 15 yards. Look on the other side of the field. Look at Devonta Freeman. He had 27 carries for 153 yards, right? The next person on their team with the most attempts was Matt Ryan with 3. Now, it's obvious that the Falcons have decided who their horse is.
Right. No, exactly. Well, not only have they decided who their horse is, you've talked about this after the first 2 weeks of the season, when you look at the Redskins. The Falcons not only know who their horse is, there's no decision there, but they also know what their identity of the team is going to be, and they know what the game plan is, and they're going to work and run that game plan. We've talked about this for all of last year for the most part. We've talked about this for most of the season thus far, that you've got to decide whether you're going to be this running team or whether you're going to be this passing team. And when you've got Matt Jones, Jones, and you've got Alfred Morris, there's no reason for you not to be a running team. And the team plays so well when they're running the ball. And I understand that there's all kind of dynamics that you throw into it, and you want to see if your quarterback can make certain plays. But when your identity is a running team, I mean, look, if you had Kirk Cousins and you have Alfred Morris and Matt Jones, but then you've got Matt Ryan and you've got Freeman, and you say one of these teams had 25 carries, you know, with their tie back, you would assume that it would be the Redskins with Kirk Cousins, that they would lean on the run, and their running team and the Falcons would be the ones throwing the ball a bunch and not running as much. But it was exactly the opposite. And like you said, the team's got to do some soul searching and just defining who they are on offense. Who are we going to be? Are we going to run the ball, or are we going to pass the ball more? And I think it's clear what this team needs to do is establish the run, and they have to be a running team. They have to run the ball 25 times a game or more.
And not only are we going to be a running team, but who's going to run the ball? If Matt Jones is the running back, if he's the better running back of all the ones they have in camp, if he's the best one, let him run the ball. Make Alfred Morris second string, period. Put him on special teams, whatever. If Alfred Morris is the best one, let him be the running back. You can use a Matt Jones on special team. I can see Chris Thompson coming in as a change of pace, third down, swing back out of the backfield, catch the pass, you know, catch a 3-yard pass, run for 9. I can see that. But establish your hierarchy. Establish your identity. Who is the man? Who is it the other team is going to, who's going to strike fear into the other team's heart? That's not happening with this team. It's just like, it's either a philosophy that they have, that they don't need a prime back, or they just don't know themselves. Either way, I'm troubled by that.
Right, you're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM. FederalNewsRadio.com is the website. The Redskins lose in Atlanta 25-19 in overtime off of a Kirk Cousins interception pick six to end the game. The Redskins now fall to 2-3. The Falcons remain undefeated. So when we look at this game, furthermore, we continue to focus on the offense. You had made mention when we were talking before we started recording the show, Kevin, that it seems like Kirk Cousins is not so concerned with spreading the ball around, but he found one new favorite target, where at one point it was Jordan Reed, but since he's played his 4-game quota that he plays every year, it seems like he's found Crowder, and that's the guy he wants to target now.
Yeah, it seems that I'm not sure if the plays were designed to go to Crowder. A couple of them were those quick flanker screens that Crowder's effective at that because he's so small. He can get behind a lineman. You can lose him, right? He can gain some yards. Now, in fairness, now he did hit Pierre Garçon for 8 passes for 51 yards. He hit Crowder for 8 for 87 yards. Hit Chris Thompson out of the backfield for 7. But but it's not like a guy like it's a Julio Jones. Okay, I need a first down here. This is where I'm going. Crowder hasn't scored any touchdowns, right? You know, they were giving him the inside, right? Plus, Crowder is so small. He'll catch the ball. He's got great hands, but it doesn't take much to bring him down either, right? Garçon's a little bit tougher. I don't know, but it's like he had the great catch last week for the touchdown, and he was catching it today, but there were a couple that Kurt was throwing sort of high and hard that Pierre couldn't bring him down, and the offensive flow of the game just wasn't established. In fairness, Atlanta, when they wanted to, exercise some great ball control. I mean, if your running back is getting 153 yards, which really, really surprised me because, not the play where they scored the touchdown. I guess their last play in, regulation, the last series, the next to last series before they went ahead with the field goal, they just abandoned the run because Crowder was just, he was unstoppable. Not Crowder, excuse me. Devontae Freeman was unstoppable. But the next series, they decided they were going to throw the ball. And that's when, Breeland picked off that one Matt Ryan pass. And I wrote a note at that particular time, that looked too easy. I mean, it just looked like they were just playing catch. I mean, he didn't have to make a concerted athletic effort to catch the ball. The ball just hit him in the hands and it looked like he was throwing to him almost, right? But that's, you know, we got a rookie head coach down there as well. I don't, Jay Gruden isn't really a rookie head coach, but sometimes I think they're playing Madden football. I think they forget the basis of the game, the running, the blocking, the tackling, and they think, well, I'm smarter than this guy, so we're just going to outsmart them. They think we're going to run, but we're really going to pass. And they're losing the basic concept of the game. That's why this game was so hard to predict the outcome.
No, absolutely. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings. On location, Kevin Stanfield is in studio. And when we come back, we've got more analysis on the Washington Redskins' loss to the Atlanta Falcons, 25-19 in overtime. Skins now 2-3. We'll be back on Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio.
Now, back to the Federal Football Report with Claude and Kevin. You know, they asked me to read this, but did they invite me to be on their dopey show? Of course not. The nerve of some people. Come on, guys. I like football, too.
Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Kevin Stanfield, our clandestine host, Claude Jennings, somewhere on assignment. You know, Claude lives that double life, one for the good of the country, the other for the good of you, the Burgundy and Gold fan. After the Burgundy and Gold loss in overtime to the Atlanta Falcons, Claude's going to come back with you with some highlights and some of his own unbiased opinion. But a couple of things I wanted to rant about this game, and that is necessarily all about the Burgundy and Gold. The first one is when Devontae Freeman caught that pass for what was initially ruled a touchdown to put the Falcons up over the Burgundy and Gold, and there was no doubt in my mind. I mean, it was a touchdown. Anyone who knows anything about the game of football realizes that was a touchdown. But with this recent trend to microscopically analyze the reception, especially the scoring play, and the dreaded football move. The football move. Isn't that sound like something you hear on the Seinfeld show? The football move. That's my move. Yeah, they overturned it. They reversed the decision on the touchdown, which made Devonta Freeman really mad because when he scored, he broke like four tackles to get into the end zone. I want to take a quick look at that particular call, because if you remember that particular call on Dez Bryant after a fantastic catch, and I use the word catch, that's what prevented the Cowboys from going to the NFC Championship last year. Now, I don't know what it was, what circumstance caused the rules committee to look at football, look at what a catch is and what a scoring play is, and determine that they needed to put some other restrictions on that particular play to heighten the critique of what we now know as the football move. Whatever reason they had for putting that rule in the rule books cannot equal the controversy that is caused. Cannot. It just simply cannot. Because number one, no one knew it was a problem. No one knew. No, there was no clamoring of saying, we got to change this and put the football move into the rule books because it's causing too much confusion. They did exactly what it seems to me is they did exactly what it was they were trying to prevent. And no rule is a good rule if it causes confusion. The rules should be clear. They should be fair. They should be easy to understand by both teams and the fans. Everyone knows what a clip is. Everyone knows what a hold is. Everyone knows what a face mask is. What is a football move? Even being a Burgundy and Gold fan, it's hard to see that happen to any team in the fairness of the game. That's just hard to see. They got to revisit that. They got to do it right away. The second thing I want to talk about, and we didn't talk about it in our opening segment, is the fact that Kyle Shanahan, former offensive coordinator for the Burgundy and Gold, is now the offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons. Now, to me, Kyle got caught up in some garbage around here because when you're in a situation where this is a business, you know, I understand the love of the game and all that, but football is a business. You're in a situation where the head decision maker on your team is your father. Right, wrong, in between, is still your father. So how much was he going to bump heads with Mike Shanahan? I mean, you got to give it to Kyle. When RG3 first came to this team, it was Kyle that innovated the read option offense to the point where it was tailor-made for RG3, made him the rookie of the year, took this team to the playoffs. And in big games, that season, that game against the Cowboys, winner take all, go to the playoffs, national television, if you remember, NBC flexed that game to make it the Sunday night game of the week. National stage. No bigger game for a rookie to be in. And the Burgundy and Gold prevail. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Kyle Shanahan. Now, if there was a circumstance, envision there was a circumstance where Kyle and the head coach weren't related. When the turmoil started around here, if you look at this thing objectively, there would have been a chance that Kyle still could have been here. Been here with the quarterback with whom he had so much success in one season. With an offense that he innovated and would have had a chance to make adjustments as the defense made adjustments. But unfortunately, it couldn't work out that way because Kyle could not have been properly critiqued without critiquing his father. It was a package deal. You get one, you had to get the other. Now, who knows? Maybe Kyle was offered the job to stay. Who knows? But can you imagine the internal family conflict that would have caused? It would have been like something on Dallas where Bobby Ewing tried to get, whatever Big Daddy Ewing's name was, tried to get all the oil from him, and it would have been like turmoil all over the league. So I'd say props to Kyle. You know, he did something that wasn't done in this town for a while, is to create an offense that would lead a team to the playoffs. And from what he's doing in Atlanta this year, seems like things are going very well because he has weapons. He's using them all. He has a great receiver, a Hall of Fame caliber receiver in Julio Jones. He had one in Roddy White who mysteriously, I don't know if it's injuries or what, but has just fallen off the face of the football earth. Now, if he could get it together, if Roddy White could get back up to his Pro Bowl caliber with Julio Jones on the outside and Devonta Freeman in the backfield, watch out, league. Watch out. That's just an old-fashioned football offense that can wreak some havoc around here. You're listening, of course, to the Federal Football Report here on Federal News Radio. Kevin Stanford here while Claude Jennings is out on a mission. A couple of more points I want to bring up about the Burgundy and Gold's performance against the Falcons, if you will allow me, if you will indulge me, so to speak. I've noticed a tendency for the receivers to run routes that are short of the first down markers. Now, anybody who's ever played flag football, touch football, tackle, high school, whatever, club ball, they know you have to run the route to get the first down. If your play calls for a 10-yard out pattern, if you need 7 for the first down, you make sure you run at least 8. You got to run the distance for the first down in your route. Now, one of two things is happening here. Either the receivers are not doing that, in which case it's a matter of coaching, or the coaches are not telling this to the receivers, in which case it's a matter of coaching. Now, a lot of people have the philosophy that you shouldn't have to tell a professional football player what to do. You shouldn't have to tell them. Some things should just be a given. You should just know how to do such things. Well, tell me this. Why are there so many coaches on the team then? Why are there 26 guys on the team? What do they do? If you don't have a guy there just to go over the basics, hey, wait till the ball is snapped. Don't jump off sides. Keep the hands in. Don't hold. Don't block from behind. Get the first down. If you need 7 yards for a first down, run a 7-yard route. A 5-yard route is useless if you have a 3rd and 7. That's happening a little bit too much for my satisfaction. And again, I put it to coaching. And I'm not saying there's bad coaches. I'm saying that there's certain aspects of the game they have to get more involved in, pay more attention to detail too. On the flip side of that, if you got 26 different guys telling you what to do, you're bound to block out some of that. You just can't. The human brain is not designed for that much input. You only got 2 ears. And it's been proven that human beings generally only retain 26% of what they hear initially. 26%. Some people have a total recall. Most people have to study to retain this information. Now, if you're one of those ones that are fortunate enough to retain maximum information the first time you hear it, well, good for you. Most people don't. The coaches have to take that into consideration and tell them, get the first down. Hey, but that's just one man's opinion. And your opinion counts here, too, on the Federal Football Report. So we invite you to hit us up on Twitter at FFRep. I'm Kevin. He's Claude on assignment. We'll be right back with more of the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and the website is federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings in studio, solo for this segment. Kevin's going to join me in the next segment as we preview the Redskins game against the Jets. But right now, we're still talking about the 25-19 overtime loss in Atlanta. The Redskins fall to 2-3 on the season in what was a surprisingly winnable game for the Redskins. Not many people, including those of us on the show, thought that the Redskins had much of a shot against the Falcons, but they played tough, had a chance to win it in overtime, but then that interception from Kirk Cousins sealed the deal for the Redskins. So we want to hear some post-game audio from the press conference. We've got audio from Coach Gruden and Kirk Cousins, and so we'll start with Coach Gruden first on his overall thoughts on what was a tough loss for the Redskins.
None of them are any easier than any others. This is a tough one, man. We had an opportunity. We got the ball at midfield, and you know, we throw a pass out there, and our receiver slips and falls, and they get a pick six. You know, it's, and I made a point to our team this week that throughout the NFL, a lot of these games are decided on bang bang plays, crucial situations. And today, Atlanta made a few big ones, and unfortunately, we didn't. They got the win.
So just like Coach Gruden said there, I mean, your goal is to be in games at the end. I mean, look, you'll take a blowout win any week you can get it in the NFL, but there's going to be more, closer games than – you'll have more closer games than you'll have those blowout games. And so you want to be in the game towards the end of the game, and that's exactly what you saw in week one against Miami. They weren't blown out in that game. They had a good, solid win against St. Louis. They were blown out in the Giants game, but then last week against Philadelphia, again, they were in the game late. And those bang-bang plays, you know, that last touchdown to Pierre Garçon, they made that play. Kurt made that play. And so when you're in the game at the end, oftentimes it's going to come down to one play. Is your defense going to be able to make a stop on third down? Will you be able to get the crucial turnover? Will your offense be able to move the ball? Will your field goal kicker make the field goal? Will your quarterback be able to convert that third and medium or that third and long? And sometimes even that third and short, will your running backs be able to get that? Last week, we were able to get that touchdown pass to Pierre Garçon. This week, it was the Atlanta Falcons that made that interception. Kurt wasn't able to get the job done there. We talk a great deal on the show, Kevin and I, about the Redskins' seemingly lack of commitment to the running game, not wanting to commit to running the ball when you have two running backs, Matt Jones and Alfred Morris, who are horses, who can carry the team on their back, and yet they don't seem to run those guys as much as we would like to see them run. And so here's Coach Gruden talking about Atlanta. He says that the reason they didn't run the ball as much was because the Atlanta Falcons did a great job of stopping the run.
I think they did a, you know, from what I could see, obviously, they did an excellent job stopping our runs. You know, they held us to, I think, 2 yards a carry, if that, and stuck us in second and eight. Couldn't get any rhythm going, really. And it was tough. Forced us in some third and longs again. We converted a couple, but really failed to get the momentum going with our running game and the rhythm that we like to go with calling plays. You know, we have a good balance usually when we call plays, and today we just couldn't find that balance, couldn't find that rhythm, and they did a nice job stopping the run. They were moving around a little bit. They were stunting, and they had an extra guy in the box a lot. You know, they really did. They did a nice job. And, you know, when we ran the ball on the outside, we were forced to cut it back, and our backside blocking wasn't very good, or they were getting off blocks. I got to check the film out. But they did an excellent job of, you know, disrupting our backs as far as being able to read the course and then making us cut it back. And then their backside pursuit was, you know, outstanding. So we'll get it corrected. We're going to stick with the run. We're not going to give up on it whatsoever. Matt's a little banged up. Get Alfred going again. And, Chris, and see what happens.
Well, see, and here's the thing. It's good to hear the coach talk about sticking to the run, not giving up on it. And, you know, and that's fine. And that's good talk. And I understand the schemes that Atlanta throws to you. Nothing is just, you know, plain black and white. There's a lot of X's and O's, situational downs, and things like that. So I totally understand that. But when you have a running back like Matt Jones or Alfred Morris, they can't touch the ball. Matt Jones only touched the ball 11 times. Alfred Morris only touched the ball 8 times. The team had a total of 24 carries out of everybody, all the backs, all three backs. Chris Thompson had 3 carries again. Matt Jones, 11 carries. Alfred Morris, 8 carries. Kirk Cousins had 1 carry. Jamison Crowder, you can't have 24 carries when you have these power backs. He mentioned 3 things: balance, rhythm, and momentum. Big backs need to carry the ball at least 12 times before they even get into any kind of rhythm, before they can get any kind of momentum, and it does keep things balanced. Look, when you only have 24 carries, but then you've got 32 passing attempts, that seems pretty balanced. But also, you're talking about a team that seems to have no identity. Are you going to be a power rushing team? Because that seems to be when you're the most productive, when you're power running the ball and when you're feeding the ball to Alfred Morris or Matt Jones. Doesn't matter which one of them gets the carries. I mean, we can debate whether it should be Alfred getting most of the carries or Matt Jones. But one thing's for certain, when one of them's getting a bulk of the carries and they're able to work up that momentum, you've seen it in games earlier that you can have a productive running game for this offense. But again, that comes with establishing the identity. Not only will you be a running team, but then who will be the back to carry most of the carries? So, look, we'll see if they can commit to the run. Next week's going to be a tougher challenge against the Jets because of their defense, but we'll talk about that in the next segment. Again, you're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM online at federalnewsradio.com. Kevin's coming back with me next segment to preview the Jets. Again, we're hearing post-game audio from the press conference. The Redskins lose in Atlanta 25-19 in overtime to fall 2-3 on the year. We're going to get to Kirk Cousins pretty soon. Right now, here's Coach Gruden's thoughts on Kurt's performance.
You know what? I think he was up and down. You know, he's a young quarterback on the road, hostile environment, and he competed, made some big-time throws, missed some throws that he would normally make. I think he'll tell you that. Again, we want to be in games at the end of the game, and he put us in a position to be there, and unfortunately Ryan slipped, and they made a great play. But I think we can get better from Kirk. We're going to demand better from Kirk, and he will get better.
That's Coach Gruden's thoughts on quarterback Kirk Cousins. Again, 21-32 on the day was Kurt. 219 yards, one touchdown, and two interceptions. Again, the fatal interception coming in overtime. Atlanta picked it off with a pick six to go up in overtime, 25-19. And, of course, any team scores a touchdown first in overtime, they're the ones who win it. This new overtime rule is interesting. When it was first introduced, I thought, hey, this would be kind of fair because teams will be able to go into overtime. Someone kicks a field goal, the game's not over. The other team can kind of match it or beat it with a touchdown. But I haven't seen many games do that. Last week, the Cowboys lost to the Saints with a touchdown. And so even though it seems like, hey, that's a fair rule, teams can go back and forth and try to, keep overtime extended so that way they have a chance to win it just because someone scores first. It's not the sudden death type thing, but I've seen more touchdowns in opening drives or the second drive in overtime to win the game than I've seen matching field goals or teams going back and forth. And so, a slight rule change that really hasn't had a big impact on the end of games. So let's go to Kirk Cousins again. We talked about the stat line, 21-32, 219 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. Look, he won the game last week in the last-minute drive to seal the win against to take the lead and seal the win against the Philadelphia Eagles. This week he had a chance to do it in overtime, didn't get the job done, and here's Kirk Cousins on his thoughts on his game, how he did, the offense in general, and just the game in general.
Yeah, I was hot off the left side and felt the need to get rid of the football and not take a sack and kill the drive, and threw it, and the guy made a great play, and that was it.
It seemed like today was just one of those days where things just weren't quite in sync. A couple of passes, you had the Pierre's interception that was batted up and passes a little bit high, a little behind. Mm-hmm. Were they doing things to take you guys out of your rhythm, or was it just an off day, you think?
Yeah, I felt like I wasn't good enough on some of those throws, and there's nowhere to point except to myself that I got to make those throws, and I can make those throws, and I believe I will over the long haul, but today I left too many out there.
Although Ryan slipped, did you feel like the throw was good enough on your end, or were you not happy with it?
Until I watched the film, I really can't say confidently what I thought. I just know that I tried to put it where I felt like it needed to be put, and until I watched the film, I can't really say much else with any conviction.
You guys weren't able to get your run game going. How much did that hamper your efforts? Just normally you guys keep the clock running, dominate, move the ball down the field, and to not be able to do that today without Jordan Reed, Sean, how much does that make things more difficult for you?
It helps when you can get your run game going, but we feel like we have enough playmakers and enough good pass plays and play actions that we can certainly move the ball regardless, and that's where it's frustrating because we felt like we left a lot of plays out there, and when that happens, it's tough, but really pleased with the defense, with the special teams, and again, I just look at myself. That's where I'm going to look and see where I can be better.
Ability that you've shown at least to bounce back when the plays maybe haven't gone the way that you want them to, particularly on that last drive before overtime.
Well, I mean, I don't. The bounce back thing has never been an issue for me. I feel like if you go back, you know, through my story, I mean, that's my life is bouncing back and fighting adversity and continuing to be tough, mentally, physically, emotionally tough. So, I feel like I've always been able to do that. And to play quarterback in this league, you better be able to do that. So that's something that going forward, I'll continue to have to do.
But just revisiting that drive just in general. I mean, to go 45 yards and 19 seconds and leave time for Hopkins to make the field goal, just how impressive was that?
Takes great play calling, takes great execution, great pass protection. You know, they know we're passing. Those guys can pin their ears back and rush. Our offensive line held up. I was able to take 7-step drops. Derek Carrier did a phenomenal job after the catch, getting up the sideline and getting out of bounds, which gave us a chance to regroup. Pierre did a great job coming over the middle with effort, diving for that ball. And then Jamison Crowder getting out of bounds, you know, to give us a chance for a field goal. So takes all 11, and again, the play calling really put us in a good position as well.
All right, that's quarterback Kirk Cousins. Again, 21 for 32, 219, one touchdown, two interceptions. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio 1500 and 820 AM, online at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. The Washington Redskins fall to Atlanta in overtime, 25 to 19. They dropped a 2-3 on the year. Coming up next, Kevin Stanfield joins me in studio. I'm going to preview the Washington Redskins game coming up next week against the New York Jets in New York. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and federalnewsradio.com is the website. I'm Claude Jennings on location, on the phone. I can't let you know exactly where I am, Kevin, because I let the people know where I am, I'd have to kill everybody who listens to the show.
Yeah,
and as we
yeah,
all know,
you don't
that's
want
a
that.
Lot of people, and we don't have time for that kind of stuff.
Time,
it's that kind of secret
right.
mission that I'm going on. But Kevin's in studio.
Yeah, let the public be aware. Let them know that they sleep safer tonight knowing that you're out there on assignment. So,
Well, I do this for the country. This is
right.
I do this for love of country and love of all mankind. It's really a charitable work that I do here. And we're still going to preview the Redskins' next game. They're going to be on the road in New York against the New York Jets. The Jets 3-1. The Jets did not have a game this weekend. They were on a bye. Their last game was a 27-14 win against Miami. Their only loss in the year is a 24-17 loss against the Eagles, and their two wins for the first two weeks of the season. They beat the Cleveland Browns 31-10, and the Indianapolis Colts 20-7. So, Kevin, when we look at the Jets, what are you seeing as far as just a matchup with the Jets for the Redskins?
Well, the first thing I see is the Jets with an exciting new head coach in Todd Bowles, who all Burgundy and Gold fans are quite familiar with because he helped the team win one of their four, maybe what Super Bowls did they win? Three Super Bowl championships.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the defensive coordinator for a surprising young Arizona Cardinal team, taking them to the playoffs last year. And many, including this intrepid young reporter, believe that he should have been given the shot as the head coach here with this team because of his history with the team and the fact that it would mean something to him. I mean, it's like, you know, Ditka getting to coach the Bears. Not saying that Todd is going to just walk into a Super Bowl championship, but it means something to have one of their own come back and coach your team. So and everyone knows what a challenge it is to coach any team in the Big Apple, and to have him with this start that he has, you know, just wish him the best. Except for next week. I wish him total failure next week. But I'm looking forward to one thing you know about a Todd Bowles coach team is they're gonna come at you with a tough defense. It's not gonna be a lot of gimmicks. It's gonna be a straight up in your face, smash mouth type football. And it's gonna be you know the troubles they had this year with the quarterback situation where one of the players decided that he wanted to knock out the quarterback.
And by knock out, we don't mean on the practice field.
I
mean in the locker room, punch him in the face.
Yeah. So, you know, they did all this with the second string quarterback. And you're going to get a team that's going to give you all they got. And if the Burgundy and Gold is not careful, they're going to run into a buzzsaw.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's the thing. When I think about the Jets, the first thing I look at, man, I look at this defense. And, you know, you're going to have trouble, number one, with these corners. It's not going to be easy pickings for Kirk Cousins to find an open receiver, number one, in the event that he gets time. This offensive line for the Redskins have played very well all season long, and they're going to have to be on their A game against the Jets to kind of keep pressure off of Kirk Cousins. So in the event that a receiver finds time open, because everybody's going to be able to get open. These are professionals, and no one can cover someone 100% of the time all game. And so there are going to be times where guys are open. The question is, will Kurt be able to locate the guy who's open, get him the ball, and will the offensive line be able to provide him with enough time to see the guy open and deliver the ball? Because this Jets defense is definitely for real. And for all the struggles that the offense, one thought the offense would have, especially with Geno Smith, although I think the offense would be worse off with Geno Smith, with the Jets, you know, with all the struggles one would think the offense would have, they actually have been able to put up points and look pretty good in most of their games.
There's some breaking news out of Atlanta that offensive tackle Trent Williams was being evaluated for a concussion. Now, I'm not sure if Trent was actually in the game during that last series, but there was tremendous pressure from Kurt's left side. As a matter of fact, he got hit square in the chest. That's why he couldn't follow through. That was led to that pick six that that actually cost the Burgundy a goal of the game. So, yeah, with up until that point, the young offensive line was doing very well. Kurt was able to step up in the pocket. He wasn't under a lot of pressure. I think he might have taken just one sack. So, barring injury, you know, hopefully Trent will pass all the concussion protocol. I guess if this is league standard, I don't know if this is the RG3 concussion protocol we're going to deal with, or the standard NFL, you know, concussion protocol. But you know, either way it goes, look for the Jets to bring some noise, to put some pressure on Kurt, and defy Kurt to beat them.
Right, and you know, you just talked about Todd Bowles and what you thought of him as a coach. Another thing that should be, you know, noteworthy again is that the Jets were off this week, and so the Jets has an extra week to get ready, to game plan, to scheme, to come up with whatever they want to put together, a package in their game plan. And so what you're going to get, not only, you know, look, they're going to be a well-coached team because of Bowles, but you're going to get a well-coached team who had 2 weeks to prepare for your team. So they're going to be on their P's and Q's. They're going to have, you know, cross all their T's and dot all their I's. And so you're going to have a very well-coached team and a well-coached game plan. I would like to see the Redskins, despite how tough this Jets team is going to be on defense, I think you have to keep them honest. I would love to see the Redskins run the ball some and establish the run game against the Jets. But I would also like to see them take a chance down the field, take a chance or two. I mean, we saw it against the Falcons when the Redskins scored that touchdown, I believe, to go to get to 13, to go up 13 to 12, I think it was, where they threw the ball downfield and they got a pass interference call. I mean, anything can happen when you throw the ball down the field, you know, from pass interference to a defender tripping, you know, anything. And so I would like to see the Redskins at least trying to go down the field, which they don't seem to do a lot now.
It seems interesting that Kurt has no problem throwing in the coverage if it's a 10-yard pass. But if it's deep, he seems to hesitate, like one is worse than the other. Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. You have to open it up. That's how they got the Matt Jones touchdown, because of that I would say questionable pass interference, because this is pass interference on every play. But that's being like isolated in the middle of the field. You no one argued with the ref calling that call. Yeah, you got to open it up. You know, give the guys a chance. Let PR go. There's got to be a point in the game that Pierre Garçon has single coverage downfield. There's got to be a point. And when he does, let it rip. I mean, nobody's going to fault him for that. We don't know. And you know what? Here's another thing, man. It's not like Kurt has somebody looking over his shoulder. I know he's not terrified of Colt McCoy taking his job, right? And they've gone out of their way by keeping RG3 inactive to prevent him from having that. So what has he got to lose?
And as a matter of fact, you know, you just made mention of the inactive list. I want to talk about that for a second, because I'm wondering who's going to be inactive next week. You know, RG3 probably, you know, most likely will be. I wonder, is Deshaun Jackson going to be ready next year? When is he going to get on the field? I understand those hamstring things are tricky and stuff like that, but when is he going to get back on the field? When will we see Jordan Reed again? When are we going to see these guys who are supposed to help this offense? Because to be truthful, you look at the games, and even though, look, a 2-3 team, you know, we could have been 3-2 after the Falcons, and yeah, the offense hasn't looked, you know, very explosive. But they're missing a lot of firepower with Deshaun Jackson, because it's not just one person and what that one person can do. It's the different way in which the defense now has to approach you. You have to account for the deep threat in Deshaun Jackson, which opens up so much for the running game and for other receivers. And so, what I'm wondering is, when are we going to see him back on the field so we can actually see this offense close to 100% with all of its weapons? Because, I mean, you're looking at Pierre Garçon, you're looking at Deshaun Jackson, Jordan Reed, you're looking at some of these young kids like Crowder and Ross, and then you've got two backs who both can play the game at high levels. Either one of these two backs, Matt Jones, Alfred Morris, can start on any of these teams in the league. And so my question is, when do we get to see these guys off the inactive list and actually on the field playing?
Hey, man, don't you think that Tom Brady would love to have a Matt Jones or Alfred Morris in the backfield with him? Don't you think
Absolutely.
Peyton Manning would love
and
to have one of those guys?
John Jackson to throw to.
Yeah. Now, with Jackson, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because, you know, with a hamstring injury, this is so tricky because if you come back a moment too soon, a moment before you had a chance to completely heal, you risk the chance of further injury and extending your out time. So, and then past that, it's the psychological thing, especially with a speed guy, you know, because the reason he got hurt in the first place was he was trying to put on that burst to get to a ball that Kirk had overthrown. So we got to give him the benefit of the doubt, but there's got to be a number two guy. If Deshaun is your speed guy and his job is to stretch the defense, you got to have a guy on your roster as number two. Just
You know, my question, though, is how long does Deshaun sit on the inactive list? And yeah, you don't want to bring him back too soon, but this team starts to get a little comfortable and find their identity without him. And if that's the case, especially with the contract coming up, do you want to pay a guy like that a lot of money who, quite frankly, hasn't played a lot on the team, and to be quite frank, you know, coming in when he came to the team, really hasn't lived up to what you want him to be or what you would think of Deshaun Jackson team. But not simply because he's not good at the talent, he won't stay on the field. And so you already got, you know, Jordan Reed, you know, dealing with the injury bug. At what point do you want to spend more money and spend more time with Deshaun Jackson? Or is it okay to say, you know what, we've had our go at it for the last couple of years, and I think we're okay without him?
Do you think a Tom Brady would love to have Deshaun Jackson on his team? You think Peyton Manning would love to have Deshaun Jackson? Deshaun Jackson is a playmaker. He's one of those rare guys in the NFL who's a threat to go for six every time he touches the ball. And and looking at it from the business aspect of both party sides, as the Burgundy and Gold, you don't want to take a chance in hurting your investment, something that you've invested a lot of cash into. And from Deshaun Jackson's business aspect, you don't want to take a chance on a team that's not going anywhere, ruining your body, which is your contribution to this business, and risk the chance of you getting other big contacts down the road or winning championships. It's not just a money thing. It's a being able to perform things. So that's a very, very touchy situation you're in there. With Jordan Reed, you know, Jordan Reed is like one concussion away from being like, you know, not able to play, if you know, and it's about his health. It's about his long-term health. I mean, we're talking about the money impact and the game impact of Deshaun Jackson. With Jordan Reed, we're talking about he might be a concussion away from being a sideline reporter. So there's something else they got to be very
right. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and the website is federalnewsradio.com. And so, Kevin, if we can, what's your prediction for the Jets game coming up? And then I just want to take your feel on just a 2-3 record, and how do you feel so far after five games? But the Jets, what do you feel this game is going to be?
It's going to be one of two things. It's going to be Kirk bounces back those four touchdown passes, and they beat the Jets 41-31. or Kurt just tries as hard as he can, and Colt McCoy finishes the game up. it might be mop-up duty. You know what? You got to wonder how long a leash that Kurt has. Is Kurt in a position where he can't do any harm?
This is his year.
Yeah, because I was telling a friend, I have a friend who was visiting from Atlanta today, and he asked me what the real deal was. I said, look, the coach was here before the GM got here. So the GM didn't hire the coach. So the owner told him, look, this year is the coach's year. Either next year, either the coach or that quarterback will be gone. The GM's just sitting back and watching. So I think that, you know, it's Kirk has, this is Kirk's show. It's his show. Sure. We don't win, lose, or draw. You know, Captain Kirk is going to beam us up to the planet's surface, or he's going to warp drive us out of here, one or the other. But.
Right. Now, I think we want to see a game very similar to what we saw with the Atlanta Falcons, where, you know, we were astonished at the fact that the Falcons only, you know, weren't able to move the ball. I think that, you know, no one's going to be shocked when the Jets can't move the ball. I think we want to see a defensive struggle. And, you know, it's a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. I mean, I think whoever wins the turnover battle is going to be the ones who win this game. And if Kirk cannot turn the ball over, throw any interceptions in the rest, Redskins not fumble the ball. I think you're going to see, you know, it's going to be a lot of punts because, I mean, this Jets defense is pretty stout, but I also don't think that their offense can move the ball. And I think that the Redskins defense have been playing so well so far. I mean, like I said, I think the offensive line and the defensive line and the defense in general for the Redskins has been like the stars of the first half of this season, the first quarter of this season. And I think that if that continues, we'll see a pretty close game next week against the Jets, this coming week against the Jets. And it's just going to be who can win that turnover battle and who can make more big plays. There's going to be two or three big plays that the winner of this game is going to have to make.
Well, one thing I am looking forward to is the continued development of the young players. Now, that's one thing I got to tip my hat to Scott McClendon for his notion of bringing in and developing young talent, teaching them to play the game the right way and become the core of a good football team. Because mm-hmm. when you're a good football team, you're good all the way around. You're good. Your offense, your defense, your teams are good. Your bench is good. Your practice squad is good. Mm-hmm. And you got to start somewhere. You can't make a splash all the time. So they're taking their time. They're building this thing. And my only concern is, yeah, you got to have a good foundation. But if you don't have any curb appeal, right. If you just got bricks, if you got windows, all windows and no doors, it's just not going to work. So, you know, I'm hopeful, but I'm holding my breath at the same time.
It's the Federal Football Reporter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM. The Redskins drop one in Atlanta to the Falcons, 25-19 in overtime, in what was, you know, a pretty exciting game towards the end of the game. And so they've got the Jets coming up next. And Kevin, so five games in the book, Skins 2-3. What are your thoughts?
We're headed for the halfway point, and they still got a chance. They still got a chance. And they, in the NFC East, where injury seems to be the leading right now, they still got a chance if they decide, here's what we're going to do. They got to show me that they've decided that before I'm fully committed.
It's October, middle October. They're still playing meaningful football, which is great. And, you know, here's the thing. I think that when you look at, even when you look at the losses against the Falcons and the Dolphins, those are two losses that easily could have been wins. Even the win against the Eagles could have easily been a loss. But I mean, when you look at it that way, there's a team that, 2-3, but I mean, they're in these games, win or loss, they're in these games. And that's a big deal. And when you look at just the specific areas of improvement from the defense, to the offensive line, and it looks like you've got two great running backs there and some potential at wide receivers with some of these young guys. You know, we did great for the first quarter of the season last year. I mean, I think even though they lost against the Falcons, here's a team that was undefeated, and yeah, they had some injuries on the offense with some of their wide receivers, but at the same time, you still got to get out there and play. I think that you got to look at the team and say, all right, you know, yeah, 2-3, you'd much rather be 3-2 or 4-1, but they're looking pretty good. You know, they're looking pretty good, and I think, you know, given what the offseason looked like, especially the 2 or 3 weeks leading up to the start of the season where all the controversy with who's starting, who's playing, how long will Kurt play, I think leading up to the season and with all those questions, man, geez Louise, we would take this anytime given what it looked like before the season started.
Yeah, we might have to take it because we don't have enough to hang our hats on to hope for anything much more than this, because we just don't know. We have a unknown commodity in Kurt. Kurt has, again, how many times we say this? Kurt was the third string quarterback last year.
Right.
The third string. What happened in the 6 months from February to July? What happened that would cause us to believe that Kurt has just grown that much as a professional football player? I mean, mm-hmm. You know me. I believe burgundy and gold, man. But I'm just trying to analyze this like we do for real on the show. I mean, we don't have an agenda here. We just try to look at it and just tell what we see. And what I see right now is a team that doesn't really know what his identity is, and that's, mm-hmm. that's got to come from the top, man. That's leadership by the top. I don't mean Dan Snyder, because Dan Snyder has been the villain in this scenario for so many years, people just automatically assume that he has a hand in it. And I don't think so. As a matter of fact, I think he should be given full credit for the way he's handled the team in the past couple of years. He's let the football people make the decisions that directly affect his team and witness the outcome. Now, I kind of wish he does step in. Hey, okay, enough of this. You know, give me Morris, give me Griffin, because they're the ones that took me to the playoffs and I sold all kinds of their jerseys. That's what I wish he'd say, but, you know, hey, I'm just up there with Captain Kirk, right, circling the planet's surface, waiting to beam down.
And it will be Captain Kirk hopefully beaming us down a win next week against the Jets. And so you've got the Redskins losing 25-19 in overtime to fall to 2-3 in Atlanta again next week against the Jets. And we'll be back next week with another edition of the Federal Football Report. Thank you so much for listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM. And the website is federalnewsradio.com.